It's Parliament House, the place where our elected leaders make decisions about our futures. Since it's Friday, Parliament is closed and the politicians aren't here. But really, the absence is becoming less and less unusual, especially in regards to the climate crisis.
Where were they when Woodside announced they would be building a massive gas plant in the Burrup Peninsula? A project that will emit over 6 gigatons of carbon dioxide over its entire lifespan, as well as threatening sacred Aboriginal rock art.
Welcome to Understory, Western Australia's own long-running, dedicated environment program, this 20th day of October 2021. I'm Elizabeth Poe. If you manage to get along to Friday's student strike in the city, you will have heard one speaker highlight the absence of most state parliamentarians from the state parliament building that day. But she was philosophic. During her lifetime, her generation had seen a lot of members of parliament take their leave of absence from acting on climate concerns. It reminds us at Understory that State Labor's previous environment minister never managed in 4 years to sit down for an interview with our environment program about climate in particular. Eventually, last November, a few months before the election, voters got to see a climate plan. Last week's Understory guest, Brad Pettit, called that climate plan nothing more than a brochure. The Greens MLC, previously Dean of Sustainability at Murdoch University, before his long-serving role as Mayor of Fremantle, introduced on Thursday his own climate action legislation into the Legislative Council. However, Labor's current Climate Action Minister, Amber Jade Sanderson, told the ABC that having legislation for climate targets would be a really blunt and inflexible instrument. So what can we expect instead? After 8 years in opposition and now 4 years and months in government, the Minister for Climate Action thinks it's best for WA Labor to wait until after COP26, the climate talks in Glasgow starting in a couple of weeks. Perhaps that's the way we'll know what the world was saying about emissions targets in Paris in 2015 and ever since then. Amber Jade Sanderson has let us know that, come that time, she will know what interim targets are appropriate. Understory and the student strikers aren't the only ones who've noticed State Labor's policy vacuum. Community radio advocate Mary Phaeton discovered for herself the state government's curious absence from climate leadership. Here's Understory's Adrian Glamorgan speaking with Mary Phaeton.
My name's Mary Phaeton and I am the facilitator and convener of WA Climate Leaders.
Can you tell us, how did you get involved in climate leadership?
Well, it was really the most incredible experience that really has changed my life. In March 2020, I managed to bring Christiana Figueres, who's the chief architect of the Paris Climate Agreement, to Perth. And in that process, I was asked by her team to organise for her to be in conversation with someone from government and someone from oil and gas. And I wasn't able to find anybody who was willing to sit down with the chief architect of the Paris Agreement and discuss climate in public. And it scared me because I realised that there was no visible or indeed visionary leadership on climate in Western Australia. And although I'm a journalist, I'm an interviewer, facilitator, I don't have any particular knowledge on this, I realised that I'd seen something that I couldn't unsee about the place that I live in. And so I decided to try to use the skills that I have to make a difference.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, in practice, what it looks like now is WA Climate Leaders, which at the moment is an incorporated association. We're currently looking to auspice through an aligned charity for grants and funding. But the fundamental, the vision for us is that Western Australia is a global leader on climate action. And we have all of the ingredients to be able to do that, except the will and the courage, and that's what we need to gather together through this network. So the network is particularly focused on business and industry, but it is cross-sectoral, so it's academia and civil society and anybody you can think of. It's not so much just limited to people who are in designated leadership roles, but people who, in whatever way they can, are willing to show leadership around climate. So it will be a combination of all of those things. And I've just focused all of my work now in interviewing and facilitating on trying to align with that climate message as well. So I'm doing a series at the WA Museum this year called Tipping Point, which is all about climate-related conversations. So the network is growing, and I think in 2022 it'll really step into the limelight.
So is that network invitation only? How have you assembled the group?
The group was assembled initially by me being the guest curator at TEDx Perth's Countdown event at the end of last year. We called it the WA Climate Leadership Summit, and we curated the speakers, but we also curated the audience. So we actually sought out the people who are already in that space in some way across sectors, and invited them to come to this event. So initially there were 260 people in the room that day. I think I had a list of maybe 600 or 700 from that, and it's probably now closer to 1,000.
What do you think should happen next in Western Australia in practical terms?
We absolutely have to have guidance from government. We have to have goals and targets clearly set by government, and government needs to stand up and talk about climate change and climate action very clearly. So, for example, we had $750 million that was designated in the recent state budget to climate-related activities in various different areas, and I know that it's being discussed at a departmental level, but what I mean is that the ministers are actually standing up and talking about how climate is actually impacting the state in their various different portfolios and what they're doing about it. And they need to be very clear about the targets that need to be set for us to reach a maximum warming of 1.5 degrees. We're currently around 1.1, and we're already seeing catastrophic weather events. And we really have to be very clear on what that means, how we're going to get there, and what the targets are.
We know that since 2003, with Jeff Gallop and his sustainability strategy, since that was abandoned, we've heard nothing from either Liberal or Labor really in terms of an integrated strategy. How are you going to work with the Labor government when it is so shy of action on climate in an integrated way?
I feel that the government will respond to influence and pressure from business and industry. And so that's why I've focused WA Climate Leaders on that, because I don't believe they're going to lead in this case. I think that's already been proven. And so what we are seeing now is that because of the way the markets are moving, because of the pressure on organisations to meet ESG targets, they are realising that the risk of not moving is absolutely not worth it. And so they need to use their influence when they're having meetings with ministers to demand this action. And the public also needs to understand its own agency as well. And I don't think they really have that at the moment. They don't have a sense of what they can do in a big picture sense. And I would say, as a first example, move their money. Make sure that their money is invested with banks and superannuation organisations that are not investing in fossil fuels. It's hugely impactful. The general public taking their own agency and using it for good, very purposefully.
So that just means ringing up your super company and saying, have you got a sustainability fund? And if you have got a sustainability fund, do you invest in fossil fuels? Mine did. I took my money out because they thought their sustainability was economic sustainability. So I guess you've got to ask some questions. Where can people go to get some advice on this sort of thing?
Oh, the best website is Market Force. And Market Force actually compares banks and compares superannuation funds. And then it makes it so easy because it actually allows you to click on a button directly next to each different fund and take you to their website, so that you can actually start the process straight away. They've made it incredibly easy, and it's all the comparative stuff is there on the website for you to assess.
Greens' Brad Pettit in the upper house, he's bringing a piece of legislation, the climate action. Does your group support that, or how's it been involved in that conversation?
We support it, absolutely. And the timing is absolutely extraordinarily good, in the sense that New South Wales has just announced a 2030 target of 50% emissions reduction by 2030. We've had the Business Council of Australia come out today and demand a similar target as well, and you know, pointing out all the risks that are involved in not achieving that target. And so what Brad's saying very much aligns with the bare minimum. It aligns with Paris, essentially. That means that there is nothing extreme about what Brad is asking for at all. He's actually asking for what was in the Paris Agreement in 2015 as we head into COP26 in Glasgow, where we're actually meant to be raising our ambition. So it's not overly ambitious. It's what we need as a bare minimum. And because that's mainstreaming everywhere around the world, I feel really, really hopeful that the timing could be absolutely perfect.
Are we also witnessing a democratic crisis as well as an environmental crisis here in Western Australia?
In Western Australia particularly, I don't know that I would comment so much, but definitely across the country you can see that there's a movement that is gradually building around making sure that we have different and less captured voices in government, and I think that will be very critical to the transformation that needs to happen between now and 2030. I actually feel really optimistic about the fact that we'll get there. I think we'll get there by the skin of our teeth, but I do think that you're right that there is a lot that needs to change about the democratic process for that to be successful.
Did you have very much to do with business before you began these conversations, and what have you learned or been surprised by in your conversations with corporate leaders?
I didn't have much to do with the world of business at all. And what I have discovered is that there is so much will and so much intent and so much good work going on in Western Australia, and how much they were invigorated by the opportunity to cross-pollinate basically their ideas and to share what they're up to and share their concerns. Because the conversation has been suppressed here, I feel like just the fact that there is an open space where they can, it doesn't feel overtly political one way or the other. It's just a conversation that has to be had. It's a challenge that faces every single one of us, and business and industry are ready and willing and already stepping up to that. So I'm actually really energised to see the intelligence and the innovation that's being applied to this problem in Western Australia. It just needs to be supported by those government targets.
Understory's Adrian Glamorgan is speaking with Mary Fayton, who since March 2020 has been working independently to create a climate leadership network in Western Australia.
What would you like people listening to this program to do, apart from divesting, in terms of getting the message through to their elected representatives about getting behind business and getting behind Paris before we get to Glasgow?
I think it's the classic right to your politicians, but I do actually think that now more than ever that will be quite effective, because what I hear is that there are certain electorates where they're kind of known to be green, you know, so they expect to hear from those voters. However, It's everybody else. I do recognise the fact that I work in this bubble of people, everybody I talk to cares about this stuff, but I know there's a whole world out there of people who've got other issues, more pressing issues in their lives. They don't understand this. There is definitely an issue around the maturity of the conversation in Western Australia, our understanding of, when we talk about net zero and when we talk about 1.5, I would say the majority of people don't really know what that means. And so there's educating yourself, first of all, actually understand what that means and be able to have the conversation. Talk about it with people and tell them how much you care. Tell your politician how much you care. And when I say that, I mean state and federally as well, particularly in the run-up to this next federal election. And move your money. Take a look at where your money is.
Can you think of any conversation you've had that struck you or that's inspired you or made you realise you're doing the right thing?
Well, you know, we've had the example of a story that was in the West Australian that reported that Gina Rinehart, Australia's richest woman and mining magnate, had delivered a speech that was substantially full of climate denial to some students at St Hilda's College. Now, what's transpired from that was that, in fact, the principal of that school made a decision to cut out a whole chunk of that speech, all the climate denial stuff, talking about it being propaganda. She made a decision to cut that out of the speech before it was played to the students. So in the lead up to that report coming out, she was told that Gina Rinehart was extremely annoyed with her for doing that. It had been played sometime in September to the students. So she was copying it from one side then. The West Australian then reported it as having been played to the students because Gina Rinehart published it on her website. We were all able to see what the full speech was. So then she copped it from the other side, the principal. She copped it from the parents and the grandparents threatening to take their students out of the school, the general public condemning the school for playing climate denial in this day and age, the age of, you know, the IPCC report calling it a code red for humanity, the IEA report that came out quite recently talking about ending coal. And so I thought about that this week and thought about what courage it took for her to make that decision and what she's had to bear the brunt of during the week. And it made me realise that if someone like Gina Rinehart has the power and influence that she has, and has the ear of, for example, the Deputy Prime Minister, is out there saying that kind of thing, then those tiny actions, like the principal of St Hilda's, are so critical. And that's the kind of leadership. Yes, she's in a leadership role, but she's not in a climate leadership role, but she showed climate leadership. And that's very inspiring to me. And I think it's those little actions that are all gathered together that will actually drive this culture change that needs to happen. We need to change our mentality so that Western Australia can become a global leader on climate action.
Mary, you said you were changed by listening to the talk by the leader from Costa Rica. What have you become now? What do you like about the transformation that wasn't there before?
I pay great and close attention to Christiana Figueres. I listen to her podcast. I've read her book numerous times. And I mean, she's kind of like a North Star to me now because she's very inclusive in the way that she talks about climate action. She's not condemning, but she just wants to bring people in all the time. She has, I mean, the podcast is called Outrage and Optimism. So she always asks people where they are on that spectrum. But I think her brand of stubborn optimism is something that really appealed to me, and her leadership really appealed to me and inspired me enough to literally turn my entire focus to doing what I can to impact climate action in Western Australia.
What do you value about the climate leaders in Western Australia?
Well, the people who are climate leaders in Western Australia now are on the frontier of this conversation. The ones who have the courage to actually stand up and say that they're climate leaders at the moment are few and far between. And so I really respect their courage. I would give as an example David Carter, who's the CEO of Austral Fisheries. Austral Fisheries has been carbon neutral since 2016. And for a long time, he's really lamented the fact that he feels like he hasn't been able to, you know, knock any more dominoes over. But now he's starting to, and people really want to hear what he's got to say. But he had a lot of courage to do that in a time, you know, when you think about even 5 years ago, how really kind of indifferent a lot of people were to this conversation. He'd already had that transition in his mind and knew what he wanted to do and how he wanted to drive the business. So I value courage more than anything at the moment.
Thanks to Mary Phaeton, who continues to seek people of will and courage to join the WA Climate Leadership Network. And thanks to Adrian Glamorgan for bringing us this story. I'm Elizabeth Poe. If the State Minister for Environment, Amber Jade Sanderson, is able to find time before or after COP26, we hope to bring you an interview soon. Meanwhile, we have plenty more stories in coming weeks from the student strikers, the Conservation Council and faith groups, all hoping that sometime soon we'll see government leadership on climate action here in Western Australia, our precious one-third of the continent and the world's biggest carbon polluter. Join us next week, won't you, when there'll be more to explore with Understory, Radio for the Planet.